Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Jors. We're talking Packers football, and we're getting ready for the NFL Combine. Gets underway today. To do that, to preview the NFL Combine, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning. He's joined us before. He's Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Going to preview the NFL Combine with us. Tyler, how you doing this morning?
Doing good, Brian. Got the bags packed, and we'll be trucking down to Indy here soon. How about yourself?
Very good. Thanks for asking. Now, kind of as a premise for our interview today, you've been doing a Combine Countdown series at JS Online, and kind of wanted to talk about that, some of the players you've been writing about, you've had interviews with, things like that. And let's start with a guy that a lot of Wisconsin people are familiar with, Wisconsin running back Monty Ball. You talked to his position coach there at Wisconsin, Thomas Hammack. The question I have about Monty Ball here is he a jack of all trades and a master of none? And I say that on a relative basis, you know, when he gets to the NFL, obviously a good college back, but is it going to translate to the NFL?
Boy, and you know, this is a common theme with a lot of these guys, a lot of the position coaches that I talk to is, you know, they're obviously going to be pretty positive about their own guys, and you know, they want them to do well. But I think that they do offer some pretty good insight, and it's just a little different perspective than you might get from even the players themselves, scouts, media members, whatever. But Monty Ball is just a really good example of, like you said, I mean, there isn't one thing that stands out with this guy. I mean, he's not going to blow anybody away this week in Indy, I wouldn't think, as far as his 40. How many times he's benched 225, the cone drills, all of that. You'd have to think it's going to be pretty run-of-the-mill, but you put him on the field, and boy, he was just so darn productive, and he did it against the best defenses. I mean, he really did kind of step up against the Ohio States and Michigan States when, you know, and they were loaded on defense. So I think that tells you a lot about a guy. And really the one thing that probably stood out most talking to his position coach there last week is, I mean, look, he could have gone pro last year, and after the whole on-campus incident where he gets beat up and then they start really sluggish, I mean, he kind of admitted that the second-guessing set in for Ball, and he was really starting to wonder, man, what a terrible mistake about coming back here. I mean, he could have gone pro and capitalized on some pretty high stock there when really his senior year wouldn't have done a heck of a lot different. But he rebounded from that. He finished strong, and overall, he probably did improve his stock a little bit. So I guess we'll see what happens with him. I think that for Green Bay and a lot of these contending teams that might need a running back, he's going to be a possibility.
Yeah, interesting guy. Always, you know, there's just a thing that some guys are just football players and you know, might not have the best measurables or things like that. So it's always interesting to see how these guys pan out. Of course, everybody knows Ron Dayne was a good college football player, and he never panned out in the NFL. So, you know, we'll find out. You also talked to Southern Methodist defensive line coach Bert Hill about an intriguing prospect, 6'8 defensive lineman Margus Hunt. And I guess what I want to ask you here is more about the Packers, and you can mention Hunt, but, you know, do you buy that the Packers are really looking for a tall defensive lineman, as I know my defensive line coach Mike Turgovec has suggested?
Right, that you make a good point there after the season. I'm sure you're alluding to a story I believe Tom Silverstein had here where
exactly.
He talked to Turgovec about Jarrell Worthy still and that whole decision they had last year where if Green Bay could go back at that decision, and do you take a 6'1", 6'2" Jarrell Worthy, or a 6'4" D end like Devon Still? You know, maybe they would have done things differently. I just think that that position, it's so hard to find a 3-4 defensive end. I mean, you know, you go back to Mike Neal. I know he finished strong, but you know, the verdict's out on him. They haven't been able to really replace Colin Jenkins. I think just because that player is so hard to find. So if you can get a tall athletic, physical freak of a specimen there. Marcus Hunt definitely fits the bill. You have to think long and hard about him. I mean, now Hunt is so darn raw. I mean, the guy picked up the sport a couple years ago. I mean, he came to the States to throw shot and disc, and that program kind of went under, so he decided to play football. And really, there's a handful of guys in the draft who could go first round that just picked up the game a few years ago. I mean, so that's really interesting in itself. But with Hunt, I think Green Bay thinks about it because here's a 6'8" defensive end that if you feel you can coach him up and capitalize on that potential, you're going to take him.
You interviewed David Sloan of Rice about their tight end, Vance McDonald, who's also a very intriguing prospect. He plays tight end. You noted in your article that Gil Brandt has him rated as the 55th overall player in the draft. I think that kind of surprises people. You know, give me your thoughts on McDonald. But then again, I think this can also turn into a discussion about what we think might happen with Jermichael Finley in Green Bay.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. I mean, if they decide to move on from Jermichael Finley, and like Finley said himself, it's a 50-50 deal. I'm sure Finley's agent and the Packers, they're probably going to talk in Indianapolis too, by the way, so maybe you see the wheels start turning on a decision there soon. But if they do decide to move on from Finley, then this could be an option. I mean, you might not necessarily want to invest that late first-round pick in the top two tight ends. You have Ertz at Stanford, Eifert from Notre Dame. Those are kind of really the two guys that stand out at the position. But if you want to go defense with that first-round pick, maybe they can take a gamble, take a chance out of Vance McDonald, out of Rice. I mean, not a lot of tight ends, not a lot of players in general have come out of Rice, but he's gonna really impress at the combine. You're talking about a big, athletic 6'4", 260-pound tight end who did learn from an NFL tight end his whole collegiate career. So I think he's going to come out, really look good in the drills, look natural, and work his way into that discussion. Second round, maybe third round. Like you mentioned, Gil Brandt's got him 55th overall. Could definitely be a possibility for a team that might not necessarily want to, you know, take a tight end in the first round, but a little later on, McDonald could be right there.
But what is your opinion on whether the Packers will do with Finley? It's not 50-50. Either he's back or he's not. I want your opinion, Ty.
I think that they have to bring Jermichael Finley back, and I just think that athletic specimens like him are rare, and you see teams searching for those guys so much. I mean, last year, I'm trying to remember the kid. There was, Ladarius, I don't know. He went in the fourth round, but he was the one kind of athletic freak of a tight end that seemed like he could blossom down the road, and he kind of went a little earlier than expected. You just see it every year, that search for a Gronkowski, for a Jimmy Graham, it's going to consume teams because they're matchup nightmares. You can line them up all over the field. Now, we know that Finley has not lived up to his potential the last couple years, but you see the flashes. You see the effect he has on defenses. Even last year, he was still drawing a lot of attention. You don't necessarily have that plan B in place, and I don't know if the Packers really do. But Andrew Corliss didn't even play last year, coming off that surgery, that reconstruction. I don't think you can just necessarily count on him being your starter. I think you give Finley another season. That, or you find a way to restructure 3 or 4 years, some type of extension that's easier on the Packers in the short term. But I do think that they really should keep this guy around. You know, a lot's been made about the guy's attitude, his influence in the locker room. Personally, I think that sometimes gets a little overblown. I mean, he does speak his mind. It does get him into trouble here and there. But if the Packers are going to base their decision on that, I think they'd be making a mistake.
You know, just to be the voice of dissent here, I think either Tyler Eifert or Zach Ertz is going to be there at the end of the first round. I think the Packers can get one of them. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to the Packers parting ways with Jermichael Finley and his $8+ million salary and getting the next guy, you know, right away. But that's just me.
That could be the case, too. I mean, who knows? For all we know, you know, Thompson might love one of those guys. You're right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm certainly not Ted Thompson myself, but let's continue here. You interviewed Iowa State inside linebacker A.J. Klein, a native of Kimberly, Wisconsin, that played his ball at Iowa State. Now, I'm not sure how Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Badgers, let him escape state borders, but what are your impressions on Klein?
Boy, yeah, really good conversation with him. We probably talked for a good 20 minutes or so. You can just, you know, tell right off the bat, very, very smart. He's got it upstairs, sharp, bright kid. And he does have that experience, like he said himself, in the Big 12, where, you know, Iowa State, they were kind of a bottom feeder in that conference, and as a team didn't stack up well against the Oklahomas, the Oklahoma States, Texas. But really, that conference has been at the cutting edge of all these changes we're seeing in the NFL today now. I mean, Oklahoma, they were doing that hurry-up, no-huddle offense where you're barely wasting any time at all 2-3 years ago. Obviously, Oregon as well. Now, that's caught on at the NFL level. I mean, you see quarterbacks that are mobile. Obviously, Robert Griffin III, I mean, he was in the Big 12. A.J. Klein went up against him. So I just think that experience and knowing what you're going to see across the line, different formations, quarterbacks doing different things, the offense is always spreading it out. It's going to serve him well at the next level. And at inside linebacker, there's just not a lot of draftable guys there. I'm sure you've taken a look at it as well. I think that Klein could work his way into that third round area for a couple reasons. I mean, his experience in that conference, and there's just not a lot of other guys there.
Yeah, you know what? I talked to a friend of mine, Paul Guillemette, who was also at the Senior Bowl, and he was really impressed with Klein's coverage abilities, which I think is so important. You know, you mentioned the Big 12, and they toss the ball around quite a bit in that conference.
Yeah.
And yeah, interesting. Anyway, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us here this morning. We'll let you go, and I know you're going to get ready to drive to Indianapolis, so be safe, and we'll see you down there.
All righty, looking forward to it. We'll see you there.
All right, take care. Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joining us here at Railbird Central on Cheesehead TV. Great to talk about the NFL Combine with him. It starts today, folks. If you read our Packers calendar post here at Cheesehead TV, NFL Combine actually starts today. Players arrive. They do some X-rays and hospital stuff. They do team interviews. Like, the Packers will be interviewing players tonight. Now, you won't hear a whole lot about it because media coverage does not start until tomorrow. But the NFL Combine actually gets underway today in Indianapolis. So, you know, we'll be covering it wall to wall here at Cheesehead TV. So make sure to stay tuned. And you know, we got, you know, lots to talk about here on this show. We can continue to talk about the NFL Combine. We got a couple other topics that are recent that we can get to here. And I think the one that was, got a lot of the attention yesterday was the Packers announcing a ticket price hike for the fourth consecutive season. Yep, that's right. Four consecutive years, a price hike at Lambeau Field. And, you know, it's never good news. It actually caught me by surprise because normally when teams announce bad news, and Charles Woodson last Friday is the perfect example, you know, when a team releases parts ways with a legend, you know, that's never really a positive thing, albeit Charles Woodson's skills might be in decline, and that might be in the best interest of the Packers. But, you know, a guy who's meant so much to the organization, who's been a leader, they waited until Friday at the end of the workday to announce that news. And it was kind of the same issue here. Packers, you know, whenever a team announces a price hike and people have to pay more money, that's something they would usually announce on a Friday afternoon. Regardless, it comes at nearly noon on a Tuesday, which is about, you know, about a time when you can get about as most exposure as possible. So I found that kind of weird. But yeah, of course it's going to get the negative attention with the price hike. I mean, people don't really want to pay higher prices for tickets. And then there's the whole debate about, can you afford these tickets? And are people, are season ticket holders selling these tickets simply to afford the season tickets and things like that? And I think that's, you know, probably a case for most people. How many season ticket holders out there do you think are attending every game? I would venture to say that percentage is pretty low. Even diehard fans, and not to say that there aren't people that do that, but I mean, it doesn't come down to an issue of fandom. You know, there are plenty of hardcore fans out there that just simply can't afford to go to 8 regular season games plus 2 preseason games. I should say that does get broken up between the Milwaukee ticket holder and the Green Bay packages and how that's unique in Green Bay. But still, you know, it's a steep price to pay, and definitely one that not a lot of people can afford. So, you know, I think it's a case with a lot of people, myself included. I go to maybe 1 or 2 games a year. Kind of go all out for them. You know, you get your tickets and you enjoy yourself and you make a whole day out of it. You do the tailgating thing. You buy some drinks, you buy some food, and you have a good time. But the reality is you can't afford to do that 8 times a year. You know, it's really, really tough. And of course, you know, we can mention the Packers here have been a successful team. They mentioned how they are at the NFL average just about, or, you know, around there in terms of ticket prices. You know, they're not too high, they're not too low. And the fact that they have 100,000, you know, people or so waiting on the waiting list for season tickets shows that, you know, it's still in high demand. But, you know, Packers is a successful team. They've made the playoffs for 4 consecutive seasons as well, you know, kind of a parallel to the ticket price hike, that 4 and 4 years they've been a playoff team, 4 years they've raised prices. You know, if the team was poor and you're not seeing a very good product on the field, it might be a different story. But it is what it is. You know, it's a business. Nobody's holding a gun to your head, forcing you to go to a game. And, you know, what's interesting too, I found, you know, the highest priced tickets, not including suites here, I guess, but, the highest priced ticket, I think in the bowl area is $97, and they are cheaper in like the end zones. They're like $70 some, I think. But, you know what? I think, the Packers can probably maybe increase ticket prices to one more time to like maybe $99 or something like that. But really, that might be it, folks. Once season tickets, or once any tickets start, you know, if it hits triple digits on the face price, you know, on the ticket, that's when people start might balking. I think you might see perhaps you know, a little more pushback. You know, obviously with 100,000 people, that, you know, you're not going to see people giving up tickets. Well, you might, but there's just going to be more people to take their place. But I think, you know, you might see a little bit of pushback and a little bit of fan outrage. And perhaps this might be even more so in light that Roger Goodell, as you may have heard last week, reports saying that he makes $30 million per season, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. So that's where part of your season tickets are going to, paying this man $30 million per year. How do you feel about that? Let me know on the live blog how you feel about that. Interesting. In terms of Packer talk, another story that happened yesterday that came out was wide receiver James Jones paid a visit to the NFL Network yesterday. He was actually on set. He joined NFL AM. I think he did a couple other interviews that aired later on NFL Total Access, things like that. You know, said a couple different things. And one of the things that James Jones said is that basically, and I don't have the direct quote in front of me here, but I'm going to paraphrase, and that's that he believes he can be the number one wide receiver of the Green Bay Packers. And Jamie provides the direct quote here on the live blog. Thanks, Jamie, and we'll see it. It says, quote, "I'm ready. I work hard every year. I'm ready to take that role if we don't get Greg back." And of course, that's in reference to, Packers wide receiver Greg Jennings, who's scheduled to become a free agent here at the end of the league year. And you know, very much assumed to be leaving the Packers. He will be leaving Green Bay in free agency. I think the chances of Greg Jennings returning are probably about maybe 5% if I had to put a number on it. So like a 1 in 20 shot, not out of the realm of possibility, but I think the odds are pretty low. So I just don't see it happening. Of course, Donald Driver is already retired. Although, there's that whole issue. Did he sign the retirement papers that Brett Favre went through? Who's the number one wide receiver next year? It could be either, you know, James Jones, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb. They're kind of all on an equal footing in terms of how much they mean to the team, how good they all are. They all have their own strengths. You know, James Jones really came on strong this past season in 2012. I believe he led the NFL in receiving touchdowns. I don't think he was the overall touchdown leader. Who beat him there? Did Adrian Peterson beat him? But led the NFL in receiving touchdowns, really came on strong. Jordy Nelson, you know, for about the past 3 years, has been trending upward, and this past season kind of dealt with some injury issues of his own that kind of maybe held him down. And of course, Randall Cobb exploded onto the scene in 2012 here as a slot receiver. And interesting, Jones said as well that Franklin Hillside says on the live blog, Arian Foster beat him in total touchdowns. Anyway, James Jones said he thought if there's anybody on the team who could be a 100-catch wide receiver, it would be Randall Cobb, because he thinks as the slot wide receiver, he's going to see a few more targets, and maybe that's the case. But James Jones also saying he thinks that it's possible for the Packers to have 3,000-yard wide receivers in an interview he did with the NFL Network. So, do you think that's possible, the Packers to have 3,000-yard wide receivers? I think it's happened, or it's come close to happening, already in the past. The Packers obviously have had a prolific passing offense under Mike McCarthy the past several seasons. Comment from John on the live blog. Nelson will be number one if he can stay healthy for the whole season. There's one opinion, who will be the number one wideout. How do you define a number one wide receiver? Do you look in retrospect and the guy who has the most catches is the number one wide receiver? Or is it... is it just a case where the Packers really don't have a true number one wide receiver? They have three of them. You know, they have 1A, 1B, 1C. It's all depends upon how you define it, I guess. But that's a good problem to have, right? You know, for the Packers to be that deep at that position. John asked on the live blog, didn't the Packers come close a few years ago with Nelson, Jennings, and Finley? I think that's the case, right? You know, didn't they have 2,000-yard wide receivers and then a third came close? You know, so it's not out of the realm of the possibility. John also says, with the spread offense, they don't need one main guy. And I agree. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers throws the ball to who's open. You know, that's what makes Aaron Rodgers so good, I think, is he doesn't play favorites. The offense is truly designed to find the open guy, and Aaron Rodgers does that. Now, obviously, he has a progression, and I'm sure the progression differs on every play. You know, one play is first read might be Greg Jennings, or has been in the past. The next time, it might be James Jones. The next time, Jordy Nelson. The next time, Randall Cobb. He's not looking after one guy. And, I think that's what makes Aaron Rodgers so good. I think that's what makes the Packers offense so good. Now, do they need to find a running back to complement it? And that's kind of the question. If maybe we get back into NFL combine talk here, do the Packers, address the running back position? We talked to Tyler Dunn about Wisconsin running back Monty Ball. I'm not sure Monty Ball's a first round running back. Maybe. If somebody really likes him, could be the case. A guy who is thought to be a perhaps first round running back is Alabama's Eddie Lacy. And he's predicted to go to the Packers in many mock drafts. Could the Packers take him? Interesting to note that we did note in our micro blog here at Cheesehead TV, Eddie Lacy won't be doing a workout at the combine this week. He apparently has a small injury, I wish I had the article in front of me here in terms of the exact nature of the injury. All I know is it's not serious, but it is enough that they don't want to take chances at the NFL combine here with a workout. But he will be working out at Alabama's Pro Day, which happens like mid-March, I believe. So, it's not saying too bad here, but he'll be coming back and working out eventually. So could the Packers be looking at an Eddie Lacy type? You know, if they can find a guy who's a Pro Bowl running back, who they believe is a Pro Bowl running back, you know, you can't ignore those guys. John on the live blog, leaving a couple names out here that of interesting guys, and I agree, he throws out Stephon Taylor of Stanford. I love that guy. I think he's a good running back. Throws out Giovanni Bernard in North Carolina. I like Bernard too. Except the one thing is, I think the Packers have a Bernard type running back with DeJuan Harris. I think DeJuan Harris performed really well this past year. Just kind of a young, short, shifty, quick guy. So I think they would pass on Bernard because I think they feel they have that type of running back. But do they need more of a workhorse, though? Could Eddie Lacy be that? Could Stephon Taylor be that? Could Monty Ball be that? Good questions. I don't really know these. Or is it a case where, the Packers ignore the running back position? You know, we're throwing the ball. Why are we going to invest a first-round draft choice in a running back? That could be the case, too. I don't think you can ignore it totally. I mean, it all depends upon how you feel about the guy. You know, I like Eddie Lacy, and if the Packers feel he can be a Pro Bowl running back, if he can be one of the best running backs in the NFL, well, how do you ignore that if you think he's that good? You know, I don't think you could pass a guy up if you believe he's that good. Now, obviously, the assessment is the whole thing. You got to be spot on. If he turns out being just a run-of-the-mill running back, well, then you made a mistake. Interesting draft talk here as we get to beyond 9 o'clock here at Railbird Central. It means we got to wrap up, and I wish I could talk longer, but I, too, have to get ready here. I'm getting on the road to head out to Indianapolis here, but Thanks for joining us so much here this morning on Railbird Central, folks. Make sure to be staying tuned all week long for your Packers news needs, coverage from the combine. I'll be posting as much as I can. So we'll see you later, everyone. On behalf of Jamie Jors, I'm Brian Kirivu. We'll see you next week. No Railbird Central on Friday. I'm in Indianapolis, can't do it. We'll be providing you plenty of coverage. Anyway, I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.